welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. And welcome back to Inspired Island. This is a really special day and a special episode of the show. We have Ainsley McLeod and Christine Love McLeod in the studio. Welcome to the show, Ainsley and Christine.
Great to be here.
Yeah, great to be here.
And Ainsley and Christine are married and partners in life and business, or shall I say partners in their life's calling. Ainsley is an internationally acclaimed past life psychic, spiritual teacher, and award-winning author. He has been featured on The Ellen Show and on The Oprah Winfrey Show, so he's one of the few psychics to break into the mainstream media and culture. Ainsley is the author of multiple books, with his latest being The Old Soul's Guidebook, Who You Are, Why You're Here, and How to Navigate Life on Earth. Christine describes herself as a grounded spiritual mentor and is a partner in Ainsley's business, and how I got to know her was via their Soul World Sunday broadcasts, which are free events at noon Pacific, the first Sunday of every month. And before I start peppering them both with a million questions, I thought I'd start with a little tiny personal story of how I came to learn about Ainsley and Christine. So maybe a year or so ago, I was listening to my favorite podcast, Soul on Fire, which is Jordan Younger's podcast. And I've been listening to her for years, but there was this episode with a man named Ainsley McLeod on it. I had no idea who he was, but the episode really spoke to me. He didn't mention Vashon or even the Pacific Northwest in that episode. But I went on Instagram and I'm scrolling down and suddenly I think, oh my goodness, I recognize some of these photos. They're from the inside of the hardware store restaurant. I think it was an art show you had going on. And I had full body chills. I thought, oh my goodness, this is such a small Vashon world moment. And then I came to know Ainsley's work, bought his book, and then came to know Christine through the work as well. And so it was a lovely full circle moment to be sitting here with you today.
Oh, that's really sweet.
It is, yeah.
And now for folks who are tuning in right now, who are thinking to themselves, what the heck does a past life psychic mean? Could you describe what your work is, Ainsley?
Yeah. So where to begin? Well, I discovered in my early 40s that I had psychic ability. And then I kind of honed that over about 3 years of practice. And
he says that so nonchalantly, because before that he was a psychic. So in the first few years of his work, when he finally had to agree and admit that he had these gifts, he referred to himself as the reluctant psychic, which I think is actually very strange.
Yeah, it would. When I discovered I could do this stuff, there was a feeling of, oh God, you know, why can't I be a gifted plumber or something? Because, you know, it's like, you know, the psychics don't generally have such a great reputation. I actually tried finding different terms. So I finally settled on past life psychic, because that most accurately describes what I do. And because reincarnation explains everything. I mean, past lives, I say this all the time, that you can't understand who you are if you don't understand who you were. You know, it's like what we see here is just the tip of the iceberg. You've got all these past lives, and they shape who you are. They shape your personality, your fears, your talents. All talents are past life related. So if you're trying to understand yourself and you're not taking past lives into account, you'll never totally figure yourself out. So it became a bigger and bigger part of what I was doing when I was reading people, to a point where I now, before I work with somebody the first time, I get a past life in advance, you know, so I talk to my spirit guides I work with, and I found that every single time that past life relates directly to whatever's going on in my life. It's quite fascinating, because when I get it, I don't know, it's like it's a mystery. Why is this coming up? But it always has relevance.
I like to, the kind of the elevator speech I like to think of when talking about what Ainsley does is his purpose is to help people identify who they are at a soul level. You know, as for most of us old souls, we're always looking for, like, what is meaning, meaning of life, who they are, why they're here, and what's blocking them from really embodying their full potential.
Mm-hmm. And how do you describe your role in Ainsley's work right now, Christine?
I'm the missus. When I first met him and I saw what he did, and interesting, I was working in energy, but energy efficiency as opposed to spiritual energy. For 20 years, I worked down in Olympia, and I was a project manager. And so I'm despite my neurodivergent brain, and I'm very scattered, I'm also kind of organized. And so I was seeing what he was doing, and I kept thinking, I can help, I can help. So I just started helping doing web stuff for him because I was building pages before and in kind of getting him a little bit more organized, because while I'm not very organized, he is completely disorganized.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me, it was just a matter of, I saw an opportunity to help make things go better. And plus, I'm good with people. I enjoy the work that he does. And so it was a natural kind of just a transition to start working together until eventually I retired from my other job. And now here we are today working full time together.
Wow. Yeah. And I'd love to dive deeper into both of you as individuals before bringing it back to the work. And I have many questions about the work. But let's start with maybe Ainsley. Do you want to tell a little bit about your personal story, where you grew up, what you were like as a kid, and when the spirituality first showed up in your story?
Well, you know, if I talk about when the spirituality first showed up, it wasn't until my early 40s.
So, oh.
Well, or at least when I was aware.
Yeah.
I grew up in Scotland. And I never thought I was psychic, but weird, weird things happened, which I realized later. It was like seeing ghosts. One thing that really stood out was when I picked up a newspaper at the door one morning, and I looked at it and I thought, this is crazy. Somebody's going to get fired. They've printed the same story from a week ago. And I knew the whole story. There was a picture and everything, and it was like I'd seen it all before. And I went actually digging through old newspapers before that hadn't been thrown out, trying to find that copy, and it wasn't there. It was a precognition I didn't realize at the time. And there was odd little things that happened all the way through, but I was an extremely sensitive child and raised with an alcoholic, narcissistic father. So things were extremely chaotic. And I think it caused me to sort of like shut down a lot of the sensitivity and you know, for protection. So it wasn't really until I had a big epiphany I talk about all the time. Took a trip to Hawaii. It was when I moved to the West Coast. Took a trip to Hawaii and ran into my uncle in a bookstore, which was a bit of a shocker because he'd been dead for 10 years. But he was there, like, it was real as life for about a second. And then gone, but with a longer message about working together. And that sort of got me I went back to the mainland and then just tried it, you know, like, basically, is there anybody there? And found that I did have a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just, you know, I worked on it it was 3 years before I read anybody. I was so terrified of getting things wrong. And it got to the point where the spirit guides are drumming their fingers and kind of going, is he ever going to do anything with this? And my first few sessions, I wouldn't have said were really great, you know. In fact, I'd give them their money back now. But just practice, you know, and I did it more and more. And just, it's like anything, you know, the more you do it, the better you get. And but every so often I'd have some little sort of quantum leaps. That would, I'd find, you know, I'd had a like an upgrade almost every so often. And for now, it's like reading. When I read somebody, it's just like reading a book. I mean, it comes very easily, where it was a real struggle to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, I was.
Early days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it really was like trying to focus and concentrate, and with half an hour of meditation before reading people and, you know, getting into zone. Now I can do it I always take 10 minutes to get centered and kind of tap into the person. But it's much, much easier.
Wow. And do you think it's more about becoming more skilled or getting out of your own way more?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the most important thing, the biggest thing I had to learn was to get out of my own way and have no assumptions.
Or connection to the answers.
Yes, you know, yes. Yeah.
Attachment.
You know, yeah. Yes, right. And that was, it's really difficult. Because even if you think you're doing, you know, it's so funny how you're subtly kind of trying to move things in a certain direction, or you have some kind of expectation. So keeping myself out of it, that was probably the hardest thing.
Yeah. I've never met anyone as diligent as Ainsley is. When he wants to learn something new, mm-hmm. he really commits to it. My challenge is that I just want to be really good off the bat. The practice part is where it trips me up. But he is just completely committed, and he will every spare minute, like if he wants to learn an instrument or a song, every spare minute he has is focused on that thing he wants to learn until he feels like he got it, and then he can move on to learning the next thing.
Yeah.
It's, really it's actually that is how it is. It's because I don't want, I want to get that hard bit out of the way so I can get onto the fun bit. And that's kind of what's happened with the work.
Yep. Yeah. And I think you've done that in other areas too, right? Like art and music.
Yeah.
You're
a
man of many talents. Yeah. And Christine, what's your story? Where did you grow up?
Well, I've only met one other person who was born and raised in Hollywood, California, which is where I was born and raised, and a musician on the island. Michael was also born in Hollywood, I found out not too long ago, which is kind of unusual. I've never met anyone. Lots of people from California, but nobody born and raised in Hollywood. On Normal Avenue, which is funny because if you knew my family, our address was 4345 and a half Normal Avenue, which is so apropos because my family is anything but normal.
Yeah.
But I grew up in a kind of a tumultuous household. There was love, but a lot of emotional dysfunction. I was a daughter of an immigrant mother and a poverty. I'm having a total brain fog here. When in 1920s,
depression.
The Depression. Thank you. Depression era father.
Welcome.
Words. And so there was a lot of dysfunction. My dad was an alcoholic also, which, you know, Ainsley and I share in common. So I was very withdrawn. I went in a lot. I was also very, very sensitive. And I had some weird experiences also, kind of now I look back at them as psychic. I didn't think of it at the time as that. And then as I grew older and I had some really profound and at the time terrifying supernatural experiences.
Mm.
And each time there were three significant ones, two in my teens and then one as a very young adult. And each time, even though there was this really scary thing happening and I was raised Mormon and so Christian, so I thought it was the devil was coming to steal my soul kind of a thing. And I was just really strong saying, absolutely not, you know, setting these boundaries, using a lot of profanity. And each time I came out of it feeling stronger. So what it did as I got older, because I have an ability to connect to the other side. And I think because entities can sense if you have that ability, they want to get your attention. But I'm not always wanting to connect. So it's about setting really strong boundaries, which is what I was able to do over time. Anyway, so I was raised in an environment of skeptics and atheists, and my mother was religious, but then she left the church, and now she would probably, she's really more of a skeptic than anything else. But I always felt like there was something else. But I think as I got older, before I met Ainsley, I was starting to get a little bit more pessimistic, maybe a little bit, not skeptical, but just kind of like, I don't know, because I was surrounded. I was always in my whole life been surrounded by atheists and skeptics and really linear thinking people, you know, lots of engineers in the work I did before. And it wasn't until I met Ainsley that everything just shifted and it was like coming home. I was finally able to really be honest and open about what felt right to me, which was that there is something else. Maybe science hasn't been able to, quote unquote, prove this thing that is intangible, but that we can feel as sensitives. But I was at a point where I could just say, you know what, I'm just going to let my spiritual freak flag fly. I'm not going to, you know, dumb my senses down anymore and just stay open. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
beautiful. And where do your stories converge? How did you meet?
Yeah, I was living down in Olympia. I moved all over, but I lived in Olympia for about 20 years. And I knew someone on the island that I had met at a festival down in Oregon. And they invited me to a party at their house here on Vashon, which I'd never been. I lived in Olympia for 18 years and I never went to Vashon. I'd heard of it, but never went. And so a friend and I came up and that's where Ainsley and I met. And I noticed him because he had these great shoes on. I've always had a thing for shoes, especially guys' shoes. I really like it when guys have stylish shoes. It's like, oh, he's got some nice shoes on there. And he was a handsome guy. And then we talked a little bit. I detected an accent, which every American girl is like, ooh, an accent, you know? And that was pretty much.
Yeah, I just had to show up, really.
Yeah, he's got a fun story about how we met.
Well, I knew that I was going to meet her, so.
Oh.
You know,
so you dressed appropriately.
Only because he didn't know. He knew because his spirit guide said. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yes, we met on the Saturday, and the Friday was the
first Friday
artwork. And so I just, because I knew it was precognition, and I knew I was going to meet somebody very soon. I just told everybody that I ran into that I was going to meet this soulmate. And I said, it's a mission. I'm going to find this person by midnight on Sunday. And I've never heard the word looming being bandied about so much.
People were calling you one.
Yeah, what a looming. I was just having fun with it. And, I walked into the party and I was playing bass. She was singing. And I just went,
who is this?
I like the look of this one.
Yeah, it really was a very, very strong connection at first.
It was like love at first.
I had been single for 3 years. And before that, I was in a relationship for about a decade, which with someone who I considered a soulmate. We had a deep love for each other. He just had these kind of foundational dysfunctions that just weren't working in a partnership for me. And I was like, I can't do this, you know? And so I had to end that relationship. And I was at the point 3 years later where I knew I wanted to partner with someone, but I was close to 50 and I just didn't want to mess around anymore. I didn't want to do the dating thing. My sister was going, you got to do online dating. And then she would tell me all these horror stories. It's like, you are not selling this for me. And so what is so beautiful about our creation story is that we met. I didn't even know who he was or what he did. And in fact, the next morning, Googled Ainsley MacLeod and I saw he was a psychic and I'm like, oh, great. Because, I went right to crystal ball and the turban and everything. But I knew that there was something special about this guy. And the fact that he called me the very next morning, which I have never, even from my early days living in LA in my 20s, I hated that game.
Yeah.
That dating game of you got to wait 3 days. It's like, if I'm interested in someone, I want them to know and vice versa.
Yeah.
We can still have fun and do that little dance that's so exciting that everybody loves. But let's just not mess around. If we're interested, let's just acknowledge that. So
that's how I felt. I just wanted to know,
It was great. And so for me, it was like, okay, I can get past this psychic thing, even though I really identified as kind of a spiritual person. But once I got to know him, he is the least woo psychic of anybody I've ever met. He's super grounded, as am I. So that really worked for me. And then it was pretty much, that was it from the moment we met. He did tell me shortly after we met, he said his spirit guides told him she's the one. And I've always been more kind of male-like in my relationships. I've always been the one kind of one foot out the door, a little bit commitment phobic kind of a thing. And he told me that and the voice in my head was like, run! And the other part of me, the more functional part of me was like, nope, I'm gonna work on this one because I think
he's
worth
it. They knew what
they were doing. Yeah, and here we are 11 years later. Yeah.
Wow, I love that you met on Vashon.
I know, that's sweet, yeah.
And were you living on Vashon at the time, Ainsley?
Yeah, okay. I've been here for 24 years.
Okay. Yeah. And how did Vashon come on your radar?
Oh, that was, again, another one of those spiritual things. So I was living down in San Rafael, just north of San Francisco, talking to my spirit guides one day. And I just went, anything I should know about? They said, yeah, you're going to be moving. And I went, oh, geez, not again. And that was my 24th home, I think, since I'd left my parents' home back as a teen. And I was really hoping I'd settle down, sort of, I had one kid at the time. And spirit guide said, yeah, you're going to be moving. And I went, well, where? And then going another state. And I'm going, Jesus, there's 50 of them, And they said, okay, well, it's going to be one of the ones north. So they said, you'll hear about it in 4 weeks. And within 4 weeks. And then like 3 weeks and 3 days or something later, I met Pam Ingalls, painter from Vashon.
On the island, are you
familiar? Oh, yeah. We've had her on the show.
Oh, it's lovely.
And lovely person. And she was doing this Sausalito art fair. And I got chatting to her. And I realized that she's telling me about this island. Oh, this is the conversation where my spirit guides were telling me that I would hear about. And so then my ex and I came up to check the place out.
Married at the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just fell in love with it.
And,
there was no question that, this is where we were meant to be. And that was, like I say, about 24 years
ago. Yeah, I had that very feeling, very strong feeling of home, too. Really, Olympia was the first place I'd ever lived, Washington State, that I really felt like home. But then when I started coming here, it's like, oh, yeah, this is definitely home. So, it was a very sweet, sort of gentle feeling.
Yeah.
It was actually a problem for me, really, wherever I went. I never felt like I belonged.
Yeah, me too.
Always just never quite clicked. I tried Hawaii. I thought maybe it's maybe it's Hawaii, maybe I'll love it there. And no, I didn't, I mean, it was nice, but you know,
it doesn't work so well for white, very, very white skinned people like us. I actually lived on the Big Island for about a year.
Stay indoors the whole time.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Vashon just felt like, you know, these are my people, yeah, and mm-hmm. there's something very, very comfortable about it.
Yeah. So. Would you speak to the, like, what the energy of Vashon is? Because I think it's very special, and I can never put my finger on it. And I'm wondering, is it because there's a lot of old souls here?
It's exactly that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real old soul hangout. Most of the people you run into are going to be old souls. I remember hearing a few years ago there was apparently a family here who left because they were conservative and they didn't like how progressive the place was. You know, it's like, well, I actually love the fact that it is so progressive. And you
my
know,
daughter used to tease. I call her my daughter. She's my daughter by Ainsley's daughter by marriage. And she used to tease us about how we lived in a bubble. I'm like, I'm good. I like this bubble. You know, this is a bubble that works for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to have a cocoon during these wild times.
Absolutely. Yeah. It does feel like a bit of a respite.
Yeah.
And especially even symbolically, you know, you have to take a ferry to leave that other place behind. It's like almost like, you know, those dreams you have where you go to that magical place in your dreams and you just want to go back there. Kind of feels like that way for me with Vashon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like leaving that reality behind and coming here to our little sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. So you live on an island together and you work together. I feel like that's a lot of time together. Would it work for everyone? But has that relationship really been as natural as the meeting of each other?
Well, one of the things, you know, I couldn't help myself but read Christine as soon as I met her.
Yeah,
so,
good point.
Now, one of the things I will look at when I read somebody is where they are on the introvert-extrovert kind of spectrum. And it's related to something spirit guides call the paradox. And the paradox is where you have two paradoxical missions, one of connection and one of avoidance. And I am full-blown connection.
Which is fairly unusual from his, Ainsley has a method. It's a series of, it's like your soul creates this plan and it has parts, all these aspects of the plan, your soul type, and you have past lives that you experience and those fears that come with it and missions. And so it's part of this method he's put together. Yeah. So it's really like doing a personality type of a reading.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm sure that was super helpful for you to see where I was compared to where you are. It's unusual to be all connection.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I mean,
very few people have all connection.
Right.
Except for
But I very much recharge with other people.
Mm.
So, and I realized, well, Christine needs a lot of...
I am the complete opposite.
A lot of time on her own.
I recharge away from people.
So...
Including Ainsley?
Yes,
like,
including Ainsley.
Okay.
And it's really not about Ainsley personally, it's anybody.
Yes.
I need alone time and I need a lot of it. So the working together, it's never been an issue. It's only an issue when I'm not getting my alone time. And then again, it has nothing to do with him. We actually really enjoy each other's company and we don't really get sick of each other. We work well together.
Yeah.
We do different things in the business. So that's helpful. I have my autonomy. I get to do my thing. And he's very supportive of that. And when I need alone time, because he knows that about me, off you go. You know?
Yeah, I'll head up to the hardware store for a martini.
And I might take your time.
And yes, absolutely. You know, we have this sort of kabuki theater thing that we do. I'll go, well, I won't be long. And she goes, take your time.
You know, no rush.
It's lovely.
Exactly.
And it's lovely to have
that
freedom. She gets the space that she needs. I can go and, you know, end up chatting to somebody. And I tend to do most of the shopping. You know, I'm at the supermarket a lot more than Christine. You know, if she goes up, she loved it when everyone's wearing a mask.
Oh, I loved it. I would wear a hat and sunglasses and a mask. I was like,
nobody recognized.
In fact, our friend Kat, she said she saw me once and she's like, you clearly had the do not disturb sign up.
Yeah.
I don't have to interact with anyone. I was in heaven. I mean, this sounds terrible to say because the pandemic was really quite awful. Yeah. But from an introversion perspective, and I've talked to a lot of introverts and they've all felt the same way. It's like, oh my God, I could stay home. It was great. I didn't have to go out.
Yeah, I've heard this.
You know, I go up and it's, you know, I can be there for a couple of hours. It's my social hangout, you know. Running.
So I'll say, who'd you see? And he'll go on and say, who I saw. And he'd be like, oh, who'd you see? He's like, oh. And again, it's not the person that I see. It's just having to engage. It's incredibly taxing on me.
I found that the importance of understanding where you are on this introvert-extrovert spectrum. Well, it comes up a lot with relationships when I'm, you know, working with people, because if somebody has a lot of need for connection like I do, you can come across as being very clingy or, mm-hmm. or needy if somebody's trying, if they're very, very different from you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they're not getting the space that they want, they push you away. And then you, you redouble your efforts. Mm-hmm. Go, oh my God, they're pushing me away. And so I need to try even harder, and it can get really messy. So it's one of these things I talk to people a lot about. So they get that understanding. You know, I can see the percentage with a person and their spouse and help them to, you know, figure out how much time they have to give each other, mm-hmm. how to figure that out.
That's a real leg up when it comes
really
to relationships.
It's, yeah. It's like, let's make therapy. I mean, because I can look back on relationships and not just, you know, intimate relationships, but friendships where they clearly had a stronger mission of connection. And with my big old mission of avoidance, to me, they did feel clingy and needy. And that's, for me, has always been the worst. I can't stand that. But now with this understanding, I have ability to have more compassion for them. It's like they need more connection than I do. So with me, you know, Ainsley will compromise for me. I'll compromise for him too. It's like, we haven't been out for a while. He'd like to go out. I really don't want to go out. But you know what? I know this is important to him, so I'm going to put my big girl pants on and we're going to go out. And then usually once I'm out, I have a great time. It's just then when I go back home, I have to not go out for a week or two to recharge, exactly.
And I compromise too. You know, I wanted to go out for breakfast yesterday. Christine doesn't. It's no skin off my nose to have breakfast at home.
Yeah. And oftentimes he'll just go up by himself and there's always somebody that will recognize him and he'll, you know, have a lovely interaction and I get my alone time.
Yeah.
So it's a win for both of us.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And just like the Vashon specific things for avoidance, being in a small town is a give and take, right? Because you lack the anonymity that you do in a big city, mm-hmm. which means like you're going to be forced to have connections more often. But at the same time, you know, there's fewer people here.
That's definitely been something I've learned about myself, especially since applying Ainsley's sort of method. It's like, oh, it makes so much more sense. Really, that's the beauty of what, you know, when he talks about the instruction, he calls it. It's like when you understand that and can apply it to yourself, everything makes sense. Oh, that's why I do that. Oh, my God, that makes. And then now there's a name for it, you know. So it's a mission of avoidance. Yeah.
And it's a beautiful segue into the next topic, which, again, is the one I'm going to have to rein myself in on because I have so many questions, which is kind of one of the cornerstones of Ainsley's work is understanding your soul age and your soul type. So could you walk folks through who are new to this, just the general high level? People can dive in much deeper in Ainsley's books into what the age and the type means. But could you give a little overview?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So soul ages are just based on how often you've reincarnated. And you know, we're talking about Vashon being very old soul. So the people that are drawn here are going to, they've had a lot more experience than maybe most people you're going to run into mm-hmm. the rest of the country. And it shapes their views of the world and the journey, the soul's journey from, you know, life one to where it ends up. It usually takes somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 years to go from life one to usually something like life 110, 120.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the soul from a place of me to we, or narcissism to empathy, if you like. It's just that constantly growing awareness as you age that we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shows up politically. Old souls tend to be much more progressive. Young souls tend to be much more conservative. And it doesn't mean that everyone who's conservative is a young soul or whatever, but it's general, you know. And people here, you know, I've often said it's one of those places where, like, if you wanted some alternative healing, like Reiki, it's great. There's going to be plenty of people around here to do it. There's no gun store, you know, and that's unusual in a rural part.
Except for that guy that had the truck there on Vashon Highway occasionally, set up shop, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, all signs of this being an older soul hangout.
Yeah, another way of describing it is that you will really notice a lot of younger souls, especially if you follow the news or social media, you'll see a lot of people are projecting this hatred and this kind of narrow-minded thinking. And it's a projection because younger souls haven't yet learned that ability to have introspection, to look within. You can really tell the difference between a young soul and an old soul. A young soul will be like, you're the problem. And the older soul will be like, okay, how can I, what did I do? What is my part in this? Because we're looking within. We're seeking for answers within, which is that really that connection to our whatever higher self, spirit guides, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But young souls just haven't learned that yet. So it is helpful to think about it in a perspective of young soul, old soul, from just thinking of them kind of like little children. They haven't yet learned that we are all connected, to look within for those answers. And when you look within, you realize it's like not just all about me. It's about we. It's about us. You know, like what happens to this person? It's like as an old soul, we experience that at some point in our life, whether it's this life or another life. You know, so it really is a graduation into this place of bigger picture thinking, of more altruism, of more connection, mm-hmm. as opposed to this fear-based inability to look within, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite differences, I guess, that was highlighted, I think, on Instagram once was the fact that younger souls tend to be more into black and white thinking, whereas older souls think in gray. And that is exactly how I've described myself and the way I think is like, sometimes it's frustrating because I feel like mm-hmm. wish I was more opinionated, but it's like I can understand
everybody's point. Exactly. Yeah. You've been there before. Yeah. You know, when I first met Ainsley, that was actually one of the biggest things. It was this huge epiphany for me. My whole life, I always said old soul. I always identified as an older soul. You know, they're an old soul. When my daughter was born, it was like, oh my God, this is not her first rodeo, you know? Mm-hmm. But I never really thought, well, if there are old souls, of course there will be young souls. And before I met Ainsley, I used to think that there were subset species of humans because I could not for the life of me explain, why are they like that? Mm-hmm. Why are they so narrow-minded mm-hmm. and hurtful, you know? And then when I understood the concept of young souls, it's like, oh, it was this huge light bulb moment for me. That kind of introduced me to his whole teaching, his whole system. Is like, oh, it all makes sense. And it's so practical. And I am such a practical person. I need grounded, which is why I call myself a grounded spiritual mentor. I need to be grounded. There's the whole spiritual movement now is pretty unhinged, in my opinion. There are a lot of people out there that are so into this whole love and light. One of my things that I say all the time is you cannot have love and light without shadow. You can't. You have to look at the hard stuff if you want to really understand the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I think it's really a beautiful way of living your life when you have this philosophy. And then when you add soul types to it, it gets even more exciting.
Yeah, there are 10 archetypes, if you like, these soul types that they're developed over lifetimes. So when, you know, when your soul is very, very young, its first few lifetimes, it will choose to be just a simple helper type. Now, that means just taking care of helping the community, whatever it is, you know, just practical, just
building the shelters,
getting things done.
Up after
yeah,
things,
exactly. Yeah. And then when it gets more experienced, it starts to develop other soul types. A caregiver, learning to be nurturing, educator, learning to teach, thinker type, more academic, performer, singer, dancer, entertainer, creator. So there's 10 soul types in all. And the system that I use, the instruction, helps to show who a person is based on maybe, I mean, if I'm working with somebody, I can usually dig down into about 5 or even 6 soul types.
Yeah, each of us will pick a selection of them for the life ahead based on what we want to learn, what we want to heal from past lives, what we want to experience. So we'll each have about between 4 and 6 soul types that make up your personality.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and these are just, you know, one part of the instruction. There's 100 elements in all. But soul types, I think, are one of the most important things. Yeah. It's actually what most people want to find out when they talk to me. And because it, you know, I always say who you are is why you're here.
Yeah.
And if you really, you know, always go back to what did you choose for this life? Who did you choose to be? Because as I put in my old soul's guidebook, you wouldn't wear flip-flops to climb Mount Everest. And, you know, you wouldn't wear, I don't know, scuba diving gear to go for a hill walker. Yeah. So you choose a personality that's appropriate for whatever the voyage is ahead. And it's, I think for a lot of people, it's so kind of affirming and they realize, oh, this is the true person I am, because so many of us get sidetracked. You know, we come in to be a certain person. Teachers, parents, and others, they take us off the path.
Why can't you be more like your sister?
Oh, yeah. Or, and it can be well-meaning, but once you find out your soul types, you can, and what you want ideally is for each part of you to be fulfilled, to be used as much as possible, not necessarily every minute of every day. But you wouldn't choose a soul type and then never want to use it, for example. So
a lot of times your soul will choose a particular soul type, like, for example, a performer soul type. A performer really wants to be in front of an audience. You know, they're the storytellers. They're the life of the party. They're the ones that everybody's like, can't wait till they come because they're going to make everything fun and interesting. But if someone has a past life experience that really created this fear around, say, public speaking, you know, Ainsley will have clients and they will have this fear, and then they find out they're a performer soul type. It's like, that makes no sense. It's like, no, it makes perfect sense, because your soul is thinking, I want to heal this fear. And so I'm going to choose this, which is going to compel me to want to be in front of an audience. And then once you heal those fears, you really step into who you are in a way where it's like, it can be kind of surprising, I think, for people. And they realize, oh, I'm quite good in front of an audience.
And is that one of the kind of the lessons of each life, is to get to align yourself closer to your soul type?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because I've wondered, I mean, for me specifically, I took the soul type quiz, and creative wasn't the number one, but I have, thinking back on my own life, I think I was very creative as a child. I think most children are, but it was very creative and artistic as a child. And then throughout, you know, going to school, et cetera, I realized maybe that wasn't as
praised,
wanting to be a people pleaser. Right. And so I got into a very more scientific line of work and schooling. And so recently I've been trying to tap back into that creative part, and it feels like it's flowing actually quite easy. I wonder if it's a bit.
Well, you look at it, everybody has one main soul type. So that will be the one. And I'm glad you brought that up, because he does have this free soul type quiz. If you just Google Ainsley soul type quiz, it'll come right up. But you have one main soul type. That's kind of like the lens through which you view the world. And then you have one primary influence. So that will be the one you scored second highest on. That's kind of like maybe the shape of your glasses, sort of a thing. And then you have about three or four secondary influences. So those will be other soul types. That's like the bling on your glasses, or the color of your frames, or whatever. So you would, if you probably have creator in there, it just wouldn't have been at the very top. So, and you know, the quiz is a bit of a blunt instrument. It's a good and useful tool, but it's not as, you know, accurate if you say had a session with Ainsley. And honestly, a lot of people are still learning about who they are. So it really is kind of like, you take it one day, it might be slightly different the next day. That could be because that secondary influence is up more. Like I'm a spiritualist, creator, thinker, educator, performer, caregiver. But when I'm with our grandkids, caregiver is front and center.
Yeah.
So it really just depends on what you're doing in that day or that moment that you're taking the quiz. But it's a really useful tool to kind of give you an idea. And then from there, you can seek to embody those characteristics and make sure, like, you're getting to now tap into that creative part of you, which is great. You could go your whole life and not do that. And really at the end feeling like, gosh, I wish I would have, you know, done something. I wish I would have painted that picture or whatever, you know.
Right.
So the goal is that you really want to embody those characteristics, because it's what you came here to do.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's harder to diagnose is the wrong word, self-identify with the soul types. Whereas the soul age, do you find that most people know if they're a soul, old soul, and are they usually correct?
Yeah, most people I work with my typical client is late level 9. There's 10 levels in all.
And within each level, you have a percentages. Like, so someone could be like a level 9 soul at 80% through. So maybe their next life, they're going to graduate up to level 10.
You don't know until you go over to the astral plane and process whatever you've done here. But each percentage, it's not something I've written about, but it does help to give a focus or to understand what you're working on. So yeah, most of the people that I work with are in this kind of fairly narrow zone. Most people I talk to who are really old souls, who are right up at the end of level 10, know it. And the weirdest thing that I've heard so many times when I say to somebody, you know, oh my gosh, you're like 80% into level 10, could be your last life. And what people say is, oh great, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
It's incredible
it's
how many
fatigue,
people have
exhausted,
said,
yeah.
how many people have described the astral plane as home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he does talk about how there are some old souls, and they're probably more like level nine souls, are like, if I'm such an old soul, why am I such a mess?
Well, that is something I get a lot, you know, where, I mean, usually I head it off by telling people how I hear that. Because there's this idea that you get to be a really old soul and you're going to be like Yoda, and you're going to be absolutely, and, you know, it's calm and collected and wise. But what happens is that as you get to be a very old soul, the veil becomes very thin between this plane and the next, or between your conscious mind and the soul. And that's great, because you pick up on all the positive stuff, but you also pick up on the negative stuff as well, all the past lives and all the trauma that you're carrying. So sometimes the very oldest souls are the ones who are the most insecure or dealing with, you know, the biggest stuff.
Yeah. And I thought that was really helpful in when I've been reading the Old Souls Guidebook, is how phobias or anxieties or like bodily ailments can sometimes make a lot of sense when you think about past lives.
Yes.
And I thought it was really helpful way to think about it. I feel like it's less about you and this lifetime, and it's you're doing something wrong, whereas there's a reason for it,
yes.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
it might not be from this lifetime. You might not rationally understand, but I thought that gave me a lot of peace, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And so many fears that, you know, people are struggling to figure out. They can't see anything in childhood that would have caused this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've done therapy and they can't really find what it is. And of course not, because it's coming from a lifetime before.
Yeah.
And all sorts of things. So fears, insecurities, phobias, which are death-related fears, and physical ailments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the time that I've been doing this, I mean, people I worked with have blown through, I mean, things like 20 years of chronic pain in one amazing session, which I wrote about in the Old Souls Guidebook. Literally, this person's pain disappeared as we're talking,
the moment the
soul heard about the past life, and never came back. And I was telling that story at a live event maybe a year later, and that person, I never met them, so I don't know what they looked like. They were actually in the audience. And
that was me.
You know, it was me, and it still, you know, happened another time after that. She was at another event, and still the pain had never come back.
Yeah, but 40 years of really bad stuttering gone after working with Ainsley for a couple of sessions. And why is that, Ainsley? In a nutshell, the concept is...
It is really just the moment the soul is reminded that this is a past life issue. And it hasn't happened. You can't just say to the soul, hey, you know, it's a past life issue, forget about it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't know what to do with that. But if you say, this happened, that happened, this happened, and then it goes, oh, right, okay, so it can't separate these lives out on its own. It needs the help of the conscious mind.
Because the soul doesn't die, right? It's always, this is one long lifetime.
Yeah,
it's
always on life number one, even if you're on life 100. So it holds on to these memories that can be released sometimes just, as I say often, it's not with a bang, just with a whimper. It's just like, oh, okay, it's a past life thing, we'll let it go.
That was then, this is now.
And most amazing things. I mean, I've had quite a lot of luck with things like psoriasis, Crohn's.
Some pretty remarkable stories.
I feel like we're at the Wright brothers stage of understanding of how this all works. And maybe there is something as we move forward that can be sort of developed or codified, or something that can be used to help people with ailments like that. But, you know, what I get a lot of is where, you know, people have had physical trauma in the past and
past life.
You know, the person who blew through the 20 years of chronic pain, that was from beheading. Beheading in a past life will cause neck and shoulder issues.
Mm.
Whereas hanging alone, that will cause neck and throat chakra issues. There was somebody I wrote about in my second book who, it took like 6 months. It was a radical temperature change in her body, and all going back to dying of hypothermia. People who've died of hypothermia in past lives will have Raynaud's disease and stuff like that. You know, those.
And you think about it from
memories.
Yes, as an old soul, we've had a lot of lifetimes and a lot of experiences, and have died many different ways. And so those weird quirks that you have now Like for me, I could not, for my whole life, I could not stand the touch of sandpaper or bricks or anything rough. Yeah. Even when I lived in Hawaii on the Big Island, even walking on the sand, I would have to, in my voice, be like, okay, just take a step. You can get through this. You can get through this. Met Ainsley. I'm like, why is it this thing? He tells me of this. I won't talk about details because it was horrific past life. And it involved being dragged on a horse through the streets of Paris. And so that would make sense because that was probably one of the most traumatic lifetimes that my soul experienced. And so the idea of touching anything rough would be just, you know, really uncomfortable. And it's improved dramatically. There's still a little bit of an element of it. I actually think that some of those lives that are so extremely traumatic, you might not be able to release everything, but it's not keeping me. It's not holding me back.
Right.
Like I can still go to the beach and enjoy the beach. You know,
it's one of those situations where sometimes understanding it is half the battle.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. If the way that I look at it is that, you know, past life work is really incredible and it can change your life in so many ways. If you have a weird quirk that's not stopping you, like if it's not holding you back, it's interesting, but look for the ones that are like, you know, you really know you got something to say, but you're terrified to speak in public or, you know, any other number of things that you feel like it's part of what you're here to do. You can feel it, but you just can't get yourself to do it.
Well, public speaking was my biggest fear. I mean, I had such a phobia of public speaking. I didn't speak in public for 30 years.
I mean, people joke about it now because it's like, well, you know, he loves talking now, but.
I know. Yeah, I'll make enough for lost time. It was horrendous. I had so many awful experiences of, you know, bailing out of meetings, dreading round robins as it comes close to me. I'd be panicking, starting to pass out. And it all went back to a past life where I'd been judged and executed. And that's the same.
For speaking out about something. Right?
And it's the same principle for anyone who's got a fear of stage fright, fear of public speaking, all of that stuff. And I mean, I thought I would never get over it. I mean, I would come out in blotches all over my face. I couldn't speak. I couldn't think. And I did the past life work and it was utterly amazing.
And now he jokes now. You can't shut me up.
Tell you. But it was, I mean, for me, it was life changing. I mean, it was completely life transforming because it held me back so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I played in bands all my life. I couldn't test a microphone. And, you know, if the sound guy said, hey, bass player, test the microphone, I'd pretend I couldn't hear. You know, it's like, because even things like that, you know, would trigger me so badly. And once I got over that, I was able to go into any situation. It wasn't just a play, you know, if somebody was giving a talk. I couldn't go into a room where somebody was giving a speech, for example, because I think deep down there was that fear of like somebody's going to go, oh, let's hear from the guy over there. And it was like, oh my God, I'm going to die again. But that is where the soul goes. You know, you're in front of people, you're being judged, you're going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's irrational.
It'll happen again.
But it makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would think that like souls are the all-knowing 100% happiness, like love, 100% love. But it's just fascinating. And I guess that's the human element of the experience, right? And like being a human is messy. You know, if you've lived 80 lives, there's probably zero chance that you don't have any trauma in the past lives.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think to be human is to be inherently traumatized in some way or another.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that hasn't received some level of trauma.
Yeah.
And then you compound that dozens and dozens and dozens of lifetimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the soul needs to be reminded that was then, this is now, this is what happened. It's not relevant now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can let it go.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'd love to ask a fun question, which is, I know animals are very important to a lot of us here on Vashon Island. They're like a very centered part of the community here. I love your perspective on how animals and human souls can show up in each other's lives, or, you know, many times. Would you mind talking about that? I know you just
talked about that in your newsletter on Saturday.
Yeah, and your cat.
Soulmates. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lily, our cat, was with me when I was a child. She was my cat, Tiger.
And her soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she came back. I got her, but just from the time that we met. Mm-hmm. And she is absolutely adoring. I mean, she's all about love.
And she's a soulmate. Animals have souls.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will have shared past lives with your animal soulmates.
And they can come back, like I'm indicating, they can come back many times or more than once. Mm-hmm. Because their lives are shorter, so we can, and you can actually petition the universe if you really want you know, if you lose your dog or your cat or your horse or whatever, you can actually ask for that animal to come, that soul
to be reunited.
Back.
Yeah.
And then that's where people tell me all these amazing stories about how, you know, their new puppy does exactly the same thing the old dog used to do with its food bowl or something. You know, you see the signs. And I think it's immensely reassuring to know that.
Yeah.
That we'll be with them again.
It's also, too, as spirit guides, we spent a whole, month or two exploring the souls of animals and animal consciousness in our membership program. And one of the things that his spirit guide said is that animals don't typically jump species. So if they come in like us, we come into this lifetime, we're here on Earth. This is our experience from our soul perspective for whatever our soul's journey, you know, from life one to the very last one. We're going to be humans here on Earth. So it's the same thing for animals. Typically, they will choose that same species. They don't typically jump species, even though I know a lot of other people might believe or want to believe differently. From Ainsley Spirit Guide's perspective, it's pretty much if they're a cat, they're going to be a cat again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs will come back, usually roughly the same size, might be a different breed, but, you know, the St. Bernard doesn't come back as a Chihuahua.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's really cool to think about.
They have soul types, too.
Ah, yeah,
which is
there
kind
we
of
go.
Fun.
They're not as obvious as they are with humans, but, you know.
It is in some cases. Like, you look at some of the working dogs, they're the hunter types.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, the dogs that are the alphas, they're the leaders. Mm-hmm. You know, the dogs that just want to be on your lap and give you all the love, they're the caregivers. You know,
the creators,
the entertaining ones are the performers. I mean, it's really kind of fun when you think about it that
way. Yeah, fascinating. Well, I could keep you here all day, but I want to be respectful of your time. Why don't we wrap up with a question about what's inspiring you both these days?
Gosh, what's inspiring me is we're moving towards creating a kind of movement for old souls. We're I was going to say putting finishing touches. We're actually putting the early touches to it right now, but we're going to be announcing something in the next month or two. And we take a while to get, being old souls.
We're tired.
Yeah, I know. Everything takes twice as long, but yeah, we want to do something, especially, you know, the way things are politically and socially right now. It's a very, very hard time for old souls to be on the planet. Here, I'm talking here.
Excuse us.
I think what Ainsley's trying to say is what is inspiring us, I think for both of us too, is really trying to create a space for old souls who are looking around the world going, WTF is going on. This is not my beliefs. My values are different. Just of creating a space for that. It's kind of why we started Soul World Sunday, you know, our free monthly gathering. It's like for people who identify as old souls to be able to collectively come together. Because in my opinion, what is going to help us get through these trying times is connecting with each other.
Mm.
And coming from a person with a very strong mission of avoidance, that's saying a lot. Even I can see that the way that we're going to be able to navigate these times is by coming together. And it's got to be as old souls, because those are your people, you know? So I think that's probably what you were
That's exactly. Thank
say,
you for
right?
Very welcome.
saying it so much more eloquently than I would have.
Excellent. And Christine and Ainsley, we end every episode with a fun little lightning round of questions to get to know you better. Okay. Are you game?
We're ready. Yeah.
All right. First question. Do you have a favorite beverage on Vashon?
Gin and tonic?
And gin martini, usually at the hardware store restaurant.
Yep.
Good ones. If you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island?
The hardware store.
I'm not going to say the other place where I go to, because that's my alone time. But definitely, if we go out, it's typically to the hardware store, having a drink at the bar and some dinner. Yeah,
it's a great spot. And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
Yes, it's a five letter word. Starts with an F and it ends with a Y, and it's completely unreliable. The ferries or ferry. Yeah.
Yes, it's rough, especially when you're traveling, et cetera.
I used to commute down to Olympia.
Wow.
This was pre-COVID, so it was a little bit more reliable, especially on the south end. But yeah, now it's like, oh, I don't like to leave the island for that reason.
Well, we're very grateful we work at home.
Yes. Do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
It's First Friday for me. I was trying to think of something, but I love Strawberry Fest, especially
Strawberry Festival,
mom and my sister come up from Olympia. But I would say First Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How creative it is on this island, you know.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Soulworld.com.
All right.
S-O-U-L.
W-O-R-L-D.
Not S-O-L-E.
Or AinsleyMcLeod.com.
Yeah, we're both on Instagram, Ainsley McLeod, Christine Love McLeod. And
Yeah,
good follows.
And Facebook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
you for having us.
This has been a real treat. And thank you all for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on KVSH LP Vashon, your listener-supported island connection. Until next time, stay inspired.